Hey everyone, welcome to Respect Our Authority, Wisecrack South Park podcast. My name is Jacob. I'm filling in for Jared today, and I'm here with the rest of the Respect Our Authority crew. We've got live in the studio, Amanda Shirker.
Hey, hey.
And from Austin, Texas, we've got Michael Lux.
Hey, yo.
Hey, so today we're covering South Park Season 23, Episode 2. As always, let's go around the room and get first impressions from everybody. Let's start with, I know Jared likes to kind of predict what your ratings might be, and this one's a hard one for me. I stayed up a little late kind of trying to figure this one out, especially for Lux. I'm going to guess, Lux, you're going to give this an A-, and Amanda, you're going to give this a B+, maybe an A-. How did I do? Let's start with you, Lux.
Well, you didn't quite nail it.
I'm so bad at this.
So here's the thing. When I grade these episodes, I think about three things. Joke writing, the actual satire at play, and the animation quality. And on the last two points, this was like an A- episode. But the joke there like was not that many good jokes. This episode reminded me a lot of a tweet that pissed me off during the Dave Chappelle like situation. When someone was like, man, Dave Chappelle's so good at comedy, he doesn't even have to be funny to make a point. And it's like, no, you have to be funny to be good at comedy. you do have to make jokes and make people laugh. And so this was like a really smart episode and a really beautifully animated episode, I thought. But just not that funny.
I hear you. To me, the turning point, the part when I was like, oh man, Lux is going to love this. And maybe it's because the animation was the death metal scene. When we see Crimson Dawn, I just thought like, oh, Lux must be loving this. Yeah.
I love that. I love the super weird animation on the Winnie the Pooh Randy scene.
Yes.
Yeah, that was dope.
So it had moments, but just like overall, there were just long stretches where I was like, I'm just like watching an essay. I gave this like a B-, because in some ways it was really strong, but it just like didn't make me laugh very much at all.
Amanda, how did I do?
Yeah, you're an eternal optimist, Jacob. I'm gonna go B.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of echo what Lux said. Also, it just like maybe it was because I watched it twice. Like the structure didn't feel like quite as tight as a good episode or like a great episode, and it felt a little bit like insider baseball-y to me.
Yeah, it was had a lot of like Hollywood internal references,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, which is fun, but I don't know. Yeah, I ultimately I didn't laugh that much unless Mickey Mouse was on the screen.
Wow, yeah, no, he was great. He was terrific. Good point. I think I would give it an A. I had a good time. I thought it was like a funny, solid episode. I liked a lot of the comparisons between Randy and his integrity and Stan. Again, like those two are always such a good play off of each other in terms of someone who has a backbone and someone who doesn't. I thought that was really fun. I like the inside baseball references, maybe because I'm here in Hollywood and I think it's very funny and I hear a lot of these stories. But I had a really good time with it. And I think just seeing Stan kind of mosh out and be an amazing death metal band was just awesome. But a couple of quick announcements. Number one, Wisecrack is now on Medium. Amanda, I know you're already doing some writing for us there, but make sure you check out Wisecrack on Medium at medium.com/wisecrack and check out all of our amazing articles that
Yay,
we got published
read them,
there.
Please.
They're very good.
As you know, Respect Our Authority is back, and you can check out the video versions of these podcasts on our Wisecasts channel. That's youtube.com/wisecasts. And Rick and Morty is coming back in November, so you can also get ready for our show, The Squanch, which will come back as soon as that show's back. We don't know when it's going to be. It might be a surprise drop date, but make sure you check that out. So now let's get into a quick recap of Band in China, Season 23, Episode 2. Randy decides to improve sales by peddling Tegrity weed to China. Meanwhile, Stan's new band, Crimson Dawn, performs a death metal song for the town. A producer approaches them, offering to make them rich/famous via a three-act biopic. The only catch? Chinese censors have to approve the film. Stan's down to do anything to get off his dad's shitty farm. Randy heads to China, but he's stopped at the airport for carrying weed and thrown into a terrifying, scary prison where he meets Winnie the Pooh, who's locked up because people say he looks like the Chinese president. Randy appears before the judges on behalf of Pooh, Piglet, and all of Disney, accuses China of having no integrity. Mickey Mouse comes to curse him out, but discovers that he likes Tegrity weed, and the pair try to sell it to the Chinese government, who passes because they're still pissed about Pooh. So Randy violently kills the bear, problem solved. Meanwhile, Chinese censors come to town to tyrannically supervise as the boys write and film their biopic. The censors demand too many rewrites, so Stan drops out. When Kyle and Cartman return from the detention center, Stan has a brilliant idea. They can just revive their old boy band. They sing Finger Bang, and China loves it. But Stan feels like a sellout and decides that anyone who compromises to appease China is kind of a dick. Cut to Randy's semi-fascist ad for China's new brand of Tegrity weed. Now rich as fuck, Randy, covered in Pooh's blood and honey, declares the world a better place now that China has Tegrity. All right, guys. So I'm curious to dive in and let's start to find some of these interesting themes in this episode. I know it was a bit of a messy episode. It wasn't necessarily super, super tight. I can't help but think one of the biggest themes here is Randy says, I've got an idea. We can grow the family business by selling Tegrity to the Chinese. And this idea of selling out our Tegrity seems to be obviously a central piece between both Stan kind of fighting to keep his Tegrity, Randy being totally willing to do it, Disney seemingly being totally willing to do it, all of Hollywood seemingly being accused of doing it and giving up their Tegrity. So let's dive into that first. What were sort of the things that popped out in terms of that whole theme of giving up your Tegrity for China?
Well, I thought the most like money line on that question, to be honest, was from the record producer guy. mentions that he chastises the boys for, like, whining about it and says, like, not even the PC babies are whining about it and they whine about everything. Which is so insanely true to the world that we live in. Like, everyone's super ready to be like, you can't go see this movie. It gives money to a bad, creepy guy. But no one really ever comes out and says, like, you can't go see this movie. It pumps money into the Chinese government, which takes organs from Muslims. And like, it's that line was like the part of this episode where I was like, these dudes kind of get the critique they're making. Like, sometimes South Park kind of like their arguments feel like three quarters of the way done. But as soon as I heard that line, I was like, these folks get the claim that they're making. And it's like very compelling.
Totally. It felt like a thing that they had been pissed off about for a while, and they finally figured out how to make an episode about
it. Yeah. Their line directly is, come on, guys, everyone's fine with China approving our entertainment. Even the PC babies don't seem to mind, and the PC babies cry about everything. And this is an idea of almost like overlooking this idea of pretty seemingly, not violent, but seemingly inappropriate overstepping of the boundaries of censorship.
Right. If we're to make these questions about ethical consumption, which may or may not be a possible thing, we don't have to get into that. But like, if we're going to make these arguments and people do, then like, why is the China thing like exempt from that critique, you know? Like, but it, and it is.
I feel like, and maybe this almost makes me want to give this episode a B+, because usually they'll give a new perspective on something that everyone kind of knows about, or maybe something that's like everyone knows about but goes unsaid. But in this episode, they literally are bringing up a point that like I never thought about. And I've like researched the way for one of our videos, shout out, watch Is Comedy Dead on Wisecrack Edition. And it's basically all about how the reason that we don't have comedies anymore is because you can't sell comedies abroad to China. And as I was writing that and reading about how China's taking over world entertainment, I didn't think about how censorship affects that. And I felt kind of dumb, but also like glad that they... Yeah, it was very enlightening, which is like, I'm not usually like that enlightened by a South Park episode. Like, they don't usually bring up something that I've never thought about before. So that was kind of exciting.
That was one of the most clever inversions of this episode that I thought kind of really earned its keep in terms of being a great episode, was that it's simultaneously making fun at both sides too. Like always, it's simultaneously criticizing capitalism for being shallow and willing to give up Tegrity and do anything that it takes to get to the market. And then also condemning communism and condemning China in many ways for violence and for deep, deep, kind of aggressive censorship. And I thought it was just a clever settling place where there's no real clear answer, but it's just more of like, again, a very clever thing that only South Park can do, which is like sit right in the middle of those two pieces and be like, look at the lunacy on both sides here.
Yeah. The only thing, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I feel like the episode could have, and I kept waiting for them to come back and say like, America censors ourselves too, like not just for China, like the Pentagon funds every movie about the military and makes major decisions about like what content is allowed. And, you know, we've always had like we have a history of censorship for sure that I thought they would dive into and they didn't.
Like private corporations and brands and shit censor stuff too in the same kind of way where it's like, hey, maybe you shouldn't have that guy pee in a Pepsi can because you don't want Pepsi to look like it's pee or whatever. Like that's a real thing. And yeah, I mean, my one like precisification gripe in this episode is that like China's not really a communist country.
And how deep, what I didn't understand yet and I wasn't sure of is how serious are these censors? Are they real people that sit and censor content as they're like sort of sitting as an interface between the US and the Chinese film markets? Is there a board of people? There's a line about them being an extension or effectively the new version of the MPAA. Is that true? Or is it just a matter of like, oh, we have a sense of their sensibilities and what they're going to feature or show in a movie theater or not? And is it more like tacit and sort of an understanding? I don't know enough about that.
I know because when I was directing the same video that Amanda just mentioned, I did some digging around and I know there's like some degree of like intercourse on these questions where like, for instance, there's whole Marvel movies that have sequences and scenes and character arcs that are different in China.
Oh, wow.
Where they like add Chinese actors and have them do more stuff, things like that. I know that there's like some sort of back and forth. I don't know if there's like a regulatory board or anything, but like clearly conversations are happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, all I can speak to is like the way the military supervises any film that's about war in America. And there's literally like a group of people. There's like an entertainment office in the Pentagon where they like look over every script and decide whether they're going to like allow people to use American airplanes. And like they say, oh, you have to cut this plot line. And it's like, it's super exact. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same way in China, but I'm completely speculating.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think that speculation is not baseless, right? Like you said, there's the Pentagon stuff, the way that like I mentioned before, like private companies and brands like intervene very directly into film production. Like if they're doing it and it's sort of a similar process with China, it would be kind of shocking to me if there wasn't sort of a similar application.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, do you think there's anything specific? I'm sorry, my conversation is a bit formalist because I think the episode, I don't know if we have too many themes to explore. I mean, I feel like we really have this central theme of censorship, and unless we have something else we can dive into. But let's just stick with this idea of censorship for a second. We have specific examples. So Winnie the Pooh is sort of like exemplified. He becomes the martyr in the sense. He becomes the one symbol of lunacy in terms of the censorship and how far that can go. And then he becomes a victim of Randy's willing to do anything to give up his integrity. And then we have the Dalai Lama, homosexuality, organs, you know, all of these pieces that are sort of brought up as subtle kind of jabs at the government and at the censorship. So yeah, anything larger to explore there? Or are they just sort of like examples that they're bringing to the table of like, This is the sort of shit we're dealing with.
I mean, I just think that it's like factual claims about the pervasiveness of this kind of stuff, right? Like, like the Winnie the Pooh shit was real.
I looked that up.
The organ harvesting thing is a real report that's circulating now. When I was in college, I knew a guy who was from mainland China. And when I talked to him about the Dalai Lama, he referred to him as a bloodthirsty warlord. like, these are all real things, you know? And I think that's like, this is why I give this episode, that's why this episode is kind of hard to grade, because like on like a research and like argument level, it's pretty
solid.
It's really solid.
Pretty locked up tight, right? Like,
yeah,
they're citing real things that happen. They're getting into like the mechanics of those things in a pretty specific way. They're contrasting sort of like the concessions big corporations are willing to make in the name of like accessing this market with like the sort of more sort of ideologically grounded choices that people like Stan are making. And so it's really, really smart in that way. But I just think that like, you're like, sort of like you're saying, like, these are basically just examples that reify that point. I don't think they're really like
going anything specific. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're going for anything bigger than just like, we're so willing to make movies that placate the Chinese government, but the Chinese government is all these terrible things.
I feel like they could have ramped it up a little even. Like, why isn't there like a character in the biopic who's just like, I fucking love China.
Right. The biopics is another just area I wanted to explore a little bit. So this is, they're clearly poking jab at Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody specifically. There's Live Aid and the whole concert and the whole bit. Have you guys seen those movies?
I've seen Rocketman. I've seen both those movies, actually. Yes.
Okay.
On purpose.
Rocketman, sort of not. The other one, fucking Bohemian Rhapsody, I did see after it won the editing Oscar. My friends were like, it's the worst edited movie I've ever seen. Then I watched
it. That's
and
what I heard.
Then I watched it and was like, this is the worst edited movie I've ever seen. The Oscars are dumb.
I mean, I found them entertaining purely for that. But like, is there something about China involved here, or is that just a just another theme that's kind of funny to poke fun at, and as a way of driving the B plot forward? With, I guess the B plot forward with Stan and his band.
I feel like it was funny on a few levels because, like, obviously it's like impossible to make money in the music industry now,
right?
And yet these records. Biopics,
where are you guys? Where are you kids from? The 90s,
right? That and was yet, a great like. Line. These like a few like storied bands that are like established in history can make billions of dollars off of a shitty biopic. So right. I feel like they were kind of like there's that level. And
because the record producer is an interesting stand in. He's the manager. He's sort of the sage in a sense to these kids who have a real opportunity and have talent. And let's see what we can do. But what it really is about is, again, becoming the interface to sell to China. He says a couple things. What makes a band truly great is a desire to be heard and a commitment to a three-act structure that has a 20-minute setup, an hour and a half of conflict, and a big triumphant resolution. And then he says, all right, but you know what they say? You got to lower your ideals of freedom if you want to suck on the warm teat of China. So he's just constantly, I mean, he's sort of clearly that stand-in of the interface again of what it's going to take to play in China. But yeah, is there anything else to the biopic choice here, you think?
I mean, I really think it's just a riff on the music industry. Because one thing I can appreciate about the season of South Park is that so far it seems to have like a pretty substantial bone to pick with like contemporary corporatism. Mm-hmm. Which like, hey, me too. And so I enjoy that. And I think that's sort of just what all of this is like talking about like the way that the music industry has morphed into this thing where it's like basically you make music not so that you can sell the music, but that you can merchandise yourself in other ways, right?
Totally.
Music videos, biopics, VMA appearances, whatever. And so I think that the episode did a pretty good job of kind of showing this sort of thing where like, yeah, they make music and it's pretty good. And like 20 years ago in the 90s, like they could have just made a record and sold it. But now it just has become part of this bigger marketing complex, which involves China and all this other stuff that didn't exist before.
Totally. And I also feel like it was making fun of the way we need our bands to like have a compelling, convenient story.
Mm-hmm. Like, similar to our narrativizing reality
video that's about to drop on Saturday. Yeah.
Coming soon.
But this video is really about like how we digest stories like documentary and take real life and take reality and how we digest that. And we need it to be a convenient story, a packaged story in order to understand it, comprehend it. That's the way that we understand everything.
Totally.
Like humans really relate to story more than we do kind of intellectualizing things that are not necessarily, that are more formless. We need that three-act structure.
I don't know if the episode's getting at this idea, but this is something that it made me think of. In 2019, like we're a lot more interested in like connectivity with artists. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It matters a lot more that, like Old Town Road, for instance, like, it matters a lot that we all have, like, the Lil Nas X backstory to go with the song and its success in a way that, like, that didn't really matter in, like, 2005 or something. And that the biopic kind of speaks to that a little bit, this idea that, like, we really want these, like, stories and, like you said, these, like, understandable narratives of the artists beyond just, like, their art. Right. It's not just that you're making a cool painting or a cool song or whatever. So you also have like a personal perspective that can be like condensed down into like a New York Magazine interview to go along with like your death metal or whatever.
Totally. I'm working on a new script coming in Hey-o. Like 3 weeks about awesome. Film criticism and talking about the way we like consume media now that we're much more active and we're kind of like we're trying to like add context or see like deeper layers in our media in a way that like we didn't always used to. And because we have more of a platform to like talk about it on like Facebook or YouTube or whatever. And I feel like some of that, like that might be some of why we like want an artist story, because then we can like project their story onto their art and like look for deeper meaning. So I feel like there is like a good angle to it too. But I agree that like it usually ends up being like packaged like corporate bullshit.
I want to say Jared is very, very good about sort of separating that from like the artist's story and their backstory to the art itself. Is sort of look at them as separate pieces, because otherwise it can really conflate a lot of our interpretation.
Totally.
Look at like Kanye. You might look at Kanye's story and say it's one specific thing and then the art is a different thing. When you overlay them over each other, that becomes like another meaning, and it's dangerous. Not dangerous, but it's sort of like it's a shortcut that might not necessarily mean anything. It might not add up to much.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a question of like critical responsibility, right? Like you can take a purely aesthetic read on a thing and author and like author's dead, analyze it absent the story of the author. And that's one way to look at it. And that's a valuable and important way to look at it. And you can also take like a materialist perspective that accounts for like the author and their situations. And that's also a valuable and important way to look at it. And they're not mutually exclusive or anything, but I think sometimes people sort of like think one way is best. And that's not really true. Like they're all just kind of different ways of accessing the thing. Because there's value to putting Kanye's art in the context of his life. There's also a lot of value in putting Kanye's art in the context of other art. And there's also a lot of value in just putting Kanye's art out of context and just evaluating it as like an object in a vacuum. Like all those things are cool.
Yeah, let us know what your interpretations might be on this episode and across the board of kind of death of the author type interpretation. But you can, of course, email us at southpark@wisecrack.co. That's southpark@wisecrack.co, not .com. Or leave us a voicemail, too, at 213-534-8807 or 21-ELF-HUT or ELF-GUT-07. We're going to dive into the mailbag in a second.
Man, I'm still shaken by the fact that we were going with ELF-GUT for like an entire year and ELF-HUT was right there.
Hey, there's true. I mean, ELF-HUT is where the elves party. ELF-GUT is where they probiotics.
bacterial flora.
Yeah, after it's a good party, flora. Yeah. Right, after the party, you got to make sure you
digest.
It's where the kombucha goes.
It's the elf kombucha in the ELF-GUT. So I want to talk about another piece that really excited me about this episode, which was just this meta piece of where South Park sits in the zeitgeist and where it sits in the portfolio of media. Like, again, I think they're flexing that muscle either to their friends or to the industry or to the audience to say, hey, look, South Park is still a place where we can talk about whatever the fuck we want. And it's so clear in a couple places. One, I think, is clearly in the scene with Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse is going around, what's South Park? Do I own that yet? Like, yeah. No. And I think it, again, like, South Park is the only show that's willing to say, hey, we don't have any ties, any allegiances. We can talk about whatever the fuck we want. And that's, again, taking that responsibility we talked about a bit last season, which was what is Trey and Matt's responsibility right now as a show? Like, do they think they're going to squander it and just go to shit and dick jokes? Or are they going to keep up the responsibility of maybe using this opportunity to say, hey, we're one of the few last standing independent creators who can do whatever the fuck we want? And anyway, I thought this episode sort of did that. It takes this idea of like, hey, everyone else is being censored. We're not. We can do whatever the heck we want. And again, and this is the part I don't want to read too much into it because I'm not sure. I was asking Amanda before, like, is that accurate Chinese or are they making fun of the Chinese? I can't really tell. And it's always a blurry line with South Park. If they are making fun, then it sort of reminds me a bit of what's happening with the whole SNL fiasco with that cast member. And are they saying like, hey, we can make those jokes and still stand? Or am I reading too much into that? And is just like, is that a little bit too far? I just don't know. But overall, the idea that South Park is standing on its own 2 feet is interesting to me. And I thought that was another fun play that they took the opportunity to say, hey, we can swing on this.
Yeah. I mean, that was the meta text of a lot of the Stanley stuff.
Stanley's a dog.
That was my text of a lot of the Stan stuff in this episode, right? Was like, if Stan, like, often is the stand-in for Matt and Trey and for like South Park as like an entity, and Stan's sort of uncompromising, like his eventual unwillingness to sort of bend or break in the face of like all of these different corporate and Chinese and external pressures, like speaks to that same thing that you're talking about. Like, I think this episode is South Park sort of being like, at least to a certain degree, he's kind of being like, man, media is largely beholden to all these forces beyond the thing itself. And that sucks ass. One thing that doesn't suck ass about our show is that at least we're not that. And I think that's a compelling position to take because like that does suck ass.
Yeah.
A little clappy clap clap. That's right. Good for you, South Park.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very cool. And I think that they do a good job of showing it, especially like, I mean, we haven't talked about it. Like, just Randy's whole shit is such like a damning critique of the way that like businesses work.
Oh yeah. I think it's really fun to see Matt and Trey go there, right? Like as like self-identified libertarians who typically tend to be very commercialized or typically okay with free market.
Yeah, for
them to really be so beautifully critical of like, dude, these are just like tools who are taking integrity and trying to scale it and doing whatever it takes and selling out everything. Again, just it's so, I think Randy is doing great this season. And obviously with the opener, Tegrity Farms is here to stay, I think, for this whole season.
Yeah.
We had a caller dial in, was it Rob from Brooklyn, I believe, who said, yeah, seeing this Tegrity Farms opening is, you know, it's probably going to be similar to maybe season 20. We're going to have like an arc throughout the whole season. We're going to see Tegrity Farms just sort of be there as a stand-in, maybe more and more of how Tegrity is being compromised or where that might go. its potential.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad at them if this whole season is just like basically media criticism. Like, if not a full-on two for two episode, making good media arguments, at least like one and a half. Like, they've done a good job through two episodes, and it's a direction they don't always take.
Making fun of the way that we sensationalize Mexican Joker for sure.
Yeah, and the way we sensationalize the Joker generally, and like the immigrants generally. Like, they've been doing a really good job of poking fun at sort of the culture broadly without being shitty about it in a way they sometimes are.
Yeah,
it reminds me of like Team America in that it's a different era, a different time. We're talking about Bush era, but it was like they really went with this idea of that sort of America pride. And here I'm so happy that with one little joke, Tegrity Weed, that just sort of they really found what that has a lot more going on. There's a lot beneath the surface there that they can play with and explore.
Like, there's even just the element of the way brands function now, which is like they want to be your best friend and they want to seem like a person. And like, I feel like that's totally reflected in the way Randy's like, sell integrity. He's not selling weed. He's selling integrity.
Right. He's selling this feel good idea of like, if you buy this, there's going to be a path to redemption of some sort. And you're going to feel complete and whole and fuzzy.
It also kind of interacts with like the way people, like, there's this weird thing in America, right? Where everyone's like, the thing about America is that we've got these big old businesses because we know how to do business. And it's like all those fucking businesses just like exploit foreign labor and trade with foreign countries that do human rights abuses and make a bunch of money that way. Like, this isn't like actually a thing that reflects well on like America and American integrity. And like Randy's just that, right? Like, Randy's just another example of like a classic, like, huge American company that like is shitty and does shitty things, but presents itself as like representing this like down home American ethos of labor.
Totally. Mm. It's like his reaction to being in a Chinese like labor camp isn't like, oh, this is really bad and wrong. It's like, oh, there's an opening here for me to sell some fucking weed.
Yeah. By the way, this episode reminded me a lot. Have you guys ever seen the King of the Hill episode where Peggy thinks she's rescuing the little Mexican girl and then she gets arrested for kidnapping her? This episode reminded me of that, where like Randy couldn't conceptualize how he was having a problem for the longest time and like that he was fucking up, and like that, like that's so perfect, like that, because that happens so much with, like, again, more and more this season Randy just feels like a stand-in for like brands to me. Like capital B brands. And like, so often brands like do something awful and shitty and dumb, and then they're like, we didn't realize it was dumb to use the N-word in our commercial or whatever. And like, Randy just perfectly encapsulates that idea for me in such a funny fucking way. And in a way that, like, it's kind of like y'all said, like, is distinct from South Park's normal kind of political position. Right. Like, they're usually kind of like pro market, but this episode was like pretty damning. Like, when they had the NBA guys come on, they're like, yeah, the NBA is expanding to China too. Like, that's true. Like, that's a real thing that's happening. Right.
No, I thought it was really thoughtful. And again, a simultaneous condemnation of both sides, which I thought was, again, clever and smart, but very typical of South Park. But here was pretty illuminating. Like, it shone a light on something that I had not really looked at before. And especially, like you said, like to really focus on domestic issues or focus on environment, focus on things that are big. But then something that's really big and glaring and right in front of us, you know, a relationship with a nation that does have human rights violations, is like, oh, that's okay. And it's okay only because it's a intentional blindness for the sake of money. And that's where I think they're getting at the sort of like the meat of this, similar to, you know, you take the vegetarian argument or the veganism argument, like, I'll kind of close my eyes here because it's convenient to not think about it. But similarly, between the PC babies and the censorship side, I think it's been an interesting episode in that way. And it's reflecting on all sides.
I wonder, do you think it's at all like a mirror to the first episode where it's showing what like an American detention center looks like?
Well, I was going to actually bring up Cartman and Kyle. They return at the very end here, right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. I mean, what do you think, Lux?
I think sort of yes, sort of no. Like I said, I think that, you know, calling China a communist country is kind of a mischaracterization of the way their government works. And also that, like, the way China functions is very distinct from the way America functions, in terms of, like, one thing that's true about America is, like, despite the deterioration, like, we still have, like, a fairly robust press corps in a way other places don't. I mean, less so now than 10 years ago, but, like, we still have a pretty okay one. And so, like, there is some, like, kind of accounting for optics in American human rights violations that you don't see in other countries. And for I think sure. that they do draw that distinction in a cool way where, like, in the first episode, they are like doing horrible fucking things, separating kids from their parents, leaving them in camps to sleep with like weird space blankets and doing like poorly translated puppet shows. But like, and then in China, they're like shooting dissidents and shit. And I think it does. Sure. I think it begs the comparison. And I think that the comparison kind of reads being almost more similar than different.
Yeah,
just one's kind of a more marketable thing. And it's like easier to believe that like, you know, people are being killed in camps in China than being killed in camps here for many reasons. Some of them just being like personal blind spotting or whatever. But like it does play a comparison in a pretty compelling way. I don't know if it has like a ton to say about how like China's weird, like oligarchic market statism is like means people kill each other in a way that's different than America means people do bad things to each other. But it definitely does like draw in that like it just basically draws a parallel where like America's like doing a lot of the same shit China is, but like we just don't care.
A lot of it seems like the authority thing too might be, I mean, again, I don't think there's a huge comparison, but I think it's worth thinking about. Like Lex said, it's kind of begs us to kind of look at it. But the authority thing, like you've got soldiers and military officials in China who are doing it for the sake of the party, and it seems to be very authoritarian in that way. And then it seems like the officials in the U.S. side on the IC in the detention camp just seem to be doing it out of like idiocracy. They seem to be just sort of,
well, they are a little bit like make America great again.
Yeah
they've got like a little bit of ethos,
but they seem a bit a little like aimless and just sort of doing it out of being dumb.
For sure there's a lot of like banality of evil in the first episode that we don't really see in the second.
Well, in the second it feels like the machine is working, and in the first one it's just sort of like these dumb guys are just doing their dumb guy thing.
Yeah. I also wonder if Cartman and Kyle showing up without any explanation really was like supposed to be in and of itself a joke. Like the white kids make it out of the detention center really easily and they're not like scarred for life. Cartman was like, the detention center was cool. And like, there's just no explanation of what happened to like the thousands of other kids.
We got some cool interpretations of Mexican joke I'm going to bring up in a second on the voicemail. But before we get into that, any other last thoughts or comments on the show in terms of themes or anything else on this episode?
I mean, I just think that like one thing I truly, truly loved was that like there was bringing back Mickey Mouse, right?
Yes, me too. I was just going to say that.
Hell yeah. Great.
More
great,
Mickey.
Great minds think the same.
I love when he's talking to Thor. He's just like, shut the fuck up.
But it's
your job is to flex.
It's not a mischaracterization to say that like Disney and Disney owned properties like are at least were the initial driving force on like the Chinification of media.
That's sure. A really great point. I mean, and look at that airplane, right? We've got everything. I'm trying to remember. I just saw, we saw it obviously aside from the NBA, but with Captain, I mean, he did own ABC, but Captain America, Elsa, Buzz Lightyear, Thor, Black Panther, the Beast from Beauty and the Beast, Iron Man, Snow White, Kylo Ren. I mean,
and super not except the NBA, right? Because Disney owns ABC and ESPN.
Which are two
hosts for the NBA. Like all of it is Disney shit.
Yeah.
And like there's a couple of lines about now I know how Hollywood writers must feel. And right. Remember that line?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a couple of lines like that in that really inside baseball stuff that I wonder if, I don't know if Trey and Matt hang out with friends who are in showbiz too. It seemed to be pretty isolated themselves. But if they do, like, I wonder how much it's infiltrated their work. And if they all have Disney to blame. In this sense, because I think that's a really interesting point. They were sort of like the torch players on getting us into China and the Chinification of all of our media, like you said.
Yeah, if they weren't the first crack in the dam, they sure as shit were like the thing that blew it wide open.
Yeah, for sure.
And discovered that this is a business. And then because of their lead, now you've got an airplane full of people trying to take merchandise and Google and everyone trying to take 2% of a really big country. I like when Randy's like, I just did some research and China's a really big, a lot of people in China.
Also amazing that Randy didn't research that weed is illegal in China.
Yeah.
That just shows
that was one of my favorite scenes. Full of
bricks.
I loved that. I thought it was great. Just like, yeah, I thought that was terrific. Yeah. We're going to move into the mailbag again. You can leave us a voicemail at 213-534-8807 or 21 Elf Hut. 07, Where the Elves Party. You can also email us at southpark@wisecrack.co. That's wisecrack.co, not .com. Let's get into some voicemails, then we're getting into some emails, and then we'll wrap it up. This is an anonymous caller calling about Mexican Joker.
Hey, Wisecrack, what's up? Just got done listening to the South Park Season 23, Episode 1, Mexican Joker episode. And agree with pretty much everything you guys are saying across the board. But the one thing I found very interesting is I think in 23 seasons, like, this is the first time that we've ever seen Cartman show any resentment towards anything he's done to Kyle or anybody in general. And I felt like you guys just kind of glossed over that. Like, could we be seeing a turning point for Cartman's, like, character? Could this be actual some growth? Or do you think it was, you know, just, like, kind of a one-off type deal?
I don't know if it was resentment or remorse.
I think, yeah, regret.
Keep up the good work, guys. Bye. Name was Chris, by the way.
Chris. Yeah. Thanks, bye. Chris. Thanks so much.
Ooh, not so anonymous after all.
Not Blue so anonymous. Yeah. Thanks, Chris, for the call. I think you meant like remorse,
yeah,
right?
For sure. And that's a good point. I mean, it sort of felt a little fake. Like he was like, oh, you're Jewish. I forgot. Like that's all he ever thinks about when he looks at Kyle. Come on. Like,
but what do you think? Cartman wanted to be in there. Like, why is he's just like making the most of it. Maybe he's just being opportunistic, but like, it's the hard knock life and he seems to be having a good time in there. Cartman does.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think it's just making fun of the way, like if you're super privileged, like camping feels like,
this is great.
Yeah. We're roughing it.
Yeah. I mean, and also they've pump faked Cartman feeling bad about stuff before. There was like a whole season of that.
Do you think he has no remorse for this?
With Heidi, when he like becomes proto-feminist, woke guy. And there's lots of parts like pump fake Cartman turning a corner. So like, I think it's something to maybe look out for and see if they want to develop the character in a different kind of new way. But until I get some real meat on that bone, I'm just going to assume it's Cartman being a dick.
Totally.
Good point. All right, let's get into a few more voicemails. Before I get into that, please, if you guys like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to this show. It really helps us get discovered. And this show is very short, right? We only have 10 episodes of South Park, so it helps us get discovered while the show is still on the air. So please do us a big favor. Go leave us a review. That'd be hugely helpful. And as I mentioned, Wisecrack is now on Medium, so check out medium.com/wisecrack and check out our articles and go follow that and read some of Amanda's stories and everyone else's stories. We got some cool stuff on there. Let's dive into the next voicemail. This is, I'll just choose Sam talking about Mexican Joker.
Hi, Wisecrack. This is Sam in North Hollywood. Really happy South Park's back. Really happy you guys are back. I love this episode. I would not have been able to have connected the A and B storyline without you guys.
Awesome.
So I really appreciate what you're doing. One of my favorite jokes that you guys didn't point out is when the ICE agents tell the children to grab their piece of tinfoil. The animation is just like a little strip of tinfoil that we just like rip off out of your kitchen. So I thought that was really funny. One of the things I wanted to ask you is about Cartman. We see early on that he's really depressed. And once he finds out that you can call ICE on anyone you want, he's happy. And he remains happy once he gets into the detention center and singing It's a Hard Knock Life. So I want to ask you guys, why is Cartman still happy after he gets detained? Like, is he a little bit principled that he likes that everyone can call ICE on whoever they want? Does he think that he's going to manipulate his way out of there? Or does he just not care, especially considering that his mom's also probably been locked up? So thanks for taking my call, and see you next week.
Okay, thanks, Sam. I think I didn't mean to tee up that question, but it seems like kind of what we just talked about, right?
Yeah,
like
for
he
sure.
sort of like feels like it's camping. I think it's really
an adventure.
Great read. Yeah, I think it's a great read.
I mean, the one thing I'd add for given that voicemail is that like I think you can read Cartman's like little Greta Thunberg moment about like everything is bad and our childhood is stolen from us. As not like the climate's dying, but as like me, Cartman, shitty little white kid, doesn't get to be in charge of everything anymore.
Right.
Like I've lost all my weird institutional power and it makes me a sad boy. And so being able to put people in camps and shit like reaffirms Cartman as Cartman in a way that like overcomes his like sadness at the state of the world or whatever.
Yeah, there's no evidence of this. But I mean, it's also possible that like Cartman kind of enjoys like feeling oppressed. I feel like that's like kind of a theme, is like the like privileged white man, like Grandy's like projecting oppression onto himself. I feel like maybe Cartman's a little bit doing that. I don't know.
Yeah, Cartman's maybe a little bit of a punishment pig, I'd say.
Yeah.
Gives him an opportunity to respond.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another voicemail from Austin.
What's up, Wisecrack? This is Austin. I just wanted to drop some of my insights, or attempted insights, on episode one of the new South Park season, Mexican Joker. I agree with most of like everything you guys were saying. I also just kind of wanted to point out to what one of the points was about the stark contrast between the poor Central American migrants versus Randy, is he employs so many of them in the opening credits, and you can see that even though he claims to have not lost his integrity and that they still, he still considers himself homegrown, or I should say farm grown, but all of his stuff is produced in every step of the way by either Towley or a Central American migrant. He is essentially the exact same as Steven, who has a gardener that he later calls Ice On, like having him grow his weed for him. And so in that way, it's like he's actually the exact same as Steven, in that he's having someone else grow weed for him that he can then take all the weed for himself. And for Steven, it's just, you know, for his personal use. But for Randy, he's also marketing it to the entire town. And so it makes him an even, like, bigger hypocrite when he does call Ice On Steven's gardener.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. Austin, yeah, like that struck me for sure, especially when we say hi to that character. I think they're on the tour. He's like, hey, Pablo, I don't remember. Oh, hey, Juan Carlos. Yeah, and he's like, hello. It struck me as like that was clearly what was going on. That was the interplay between him becoming the terrorist later, or sort of playing off of that idea of calling on.
Yeah, I feel like it's also definitely making fun of the way huge farm corporations will market themselves as like the family farm, you know, and we're still family run after 60 years and our chickens run free. But like really the reality is like the chickens are in cages and underpaid Central American refugees are
the term
there.
As a marketer, I would say family owned, which is a very easy loose term just to say. For we're sure. A really rich family. And it sounds a lot better than like a big corporation.
Yeah, it for also sure. Reminds me a lot of how like and I think they're hinting at this a little bit about how like migrant workers get deported for being migrants, but the huge companies that employ thousands of them at below minimum wage, nothing happens to them. Like
for
they're fine.
Sure.
And I think it's getting at that a little bit, right? With like Randy being willing to call Ice On whoever, like sort of indifferent to these people, and only sort of interested in like the profit margin part of it.
Totally.
All right. One last voicemail and we'll move into your email mailbag, and that'll be wrap as until next week. Here we go. This is Nick.
Hello, Wisecrack. This is Nick from Nashville, calling for the Respect My Authority podcast.
Hey, Nick.
I just wanted to hear your thoughts on what you thought about Cartman potentially being the Joker for the season, because Joker's kind of Cartman's kind of the Joker of South Park. He's got an ambiguous backstory. No one knows who his dad is. So yeah, just wanted to hear your thoughts on that and if they will incorporate that into the episode somehow. Oh, and he laughs at people's pain. So yeah, tell me your thoughts. Love the podcast. Smooches.
nice sign off.
I think I'd be surprised if they went there, but yeah, what do you guys think? You guys probably know Joker better and even the show better, even South Park, in terms of where it would go and if that arc will continue, if we're going to see Mexican Joker again in this season.
I was surprised that we didn't see him at all in this episode. I think I called that wrong, so sorry.
I just don't read Cartman as quite being Jokery, just in the sense of like the Joker's whole thing isn't just that he like fucks shit up, but Cartman fucks shit up because he has a weird perverse belief system and is just kind of a dick, right? And the Joker fucks shit up because like the Joker is crazy or whatever.
Well,
right?
And Randy, we see Randy become the Joker in the last episode, really. In a sense, on the news, they're referring to him as Mexican Joker. Yeah. We see the terrorism, you know.
Right.
We,
so it's Randy who does the Joker's trick, but like, I just don't think Cartman is up for that. I mean, Cartman's done Jokery things like Scott Tenorman and shit before, but I just don't super think that that's going to be a runner this season, really.
Because I guess what Nick is saying is suggesting is that maybe Cartman will say, I too was in one of these camps and I too know what it's like. And just in his own, in terms of his own head, and his own backstory, he's like, I was oppressed. But he seems so happy right now. But it wouldn't be kind of crazy to think of him taking that opportunistically.
I mean, I guess I wonder if Mexican Joker will just kind of be like the scapegoat for anything that goes wrong in this season.
That could be.
Yeah, or if it's just a one-off, John.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I'm going to throw it off to you, Lux. Let us know if you got any cool emails again.
That's South a weird mailbag sound that I just made.
Was it the mailbox that. Opening or shooting? Or?
Yeah, it was someone shooting a gun full of mail at me.
It's the mail gun.
That was what I was going for. All right, so I'm going to start. We have one email specifically at episode one. The rest are about episode two, so I'll start with the episode one, John. So here we go. This is from Attila, who says, "Hey guys, Attila here from Budapest, Hungary. Great fan of the show. This is my first email to you guys. I was waiting for the new season and the podcast for a long time. Thank you that you continue. So this is why I wrote to you. I have a couple of additions to share with you. It might be interesting. You mentioned the part when Tally called Randy a towel, then Randy freaked out. Then Tally, while he was exiting the door, just said to Randy, 'Yeah, you're not a towel.' I felt that Tally tried to imply that Randy's not a real guy anymore with whom he started this business. As he lost his integrity, he's now fake. Then also, at the beginning, when Steven Stotch says to Randy that now he's making his own weed, it resembled the handcrafted beer revolution, when small breweries were popping up and made the best handcrafted beer ever. So later, here in Hungary, I'm sure it was the same in the US, but I saw this phenomenon here, people started to purchase their own little home breweries, and they started to produce their own beer. Some people did it as a hobby, like Steven, but I also saw some snobbish people who said that, yeah, every beer is shitty for me, so I'm going to do it myself. Have you seen something like this back in the States? Another hilarious thing was, for me, how bad the Spanish translation was, and particularly the Mexican Joker puppet scene. Sorry for the long email. Keep up the great job. And remember, you have at least one Hungarian listener. Peace, Attila." That's cool.
Jönapot.
Love.
You say Jönapot in Hungarian. My family's Hungarian, and it's a very, very, very hard language. All I know is Jönapot and the number one, et. So hopefully that's,
start.
Hopefully that's pretty good. No, so in terms of like the craft beer revolution, so I'll give you an example of, for me, as I think most of you guys know, if you listen to the shows, I love coffee. I'm really, really into craft coffee and third wave coffee culture. And as a result, I kind of kept wishing that my neighborhood would open up a really good coffee shop. I live kind of in an edgy part of town. And then all of a sudden up pops up a great, fancy, cool, trendy coffee shop. I went to go visit, met with the owner, had a really nice time. And then, but I'm a home barista. So like I met her, love the place, but I like to make my own coffee. And I feel like every time I make a cup of coffee now, or as, let me give you a better example. I went there and she made me a matcha iced latte, which was amazing. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to, I mean, I don't want to spend $6.50 each time. I'm going to just make it at home for a dollar or 50 cents or whatever. And so I started doing that. And every time I make that matcha latte, I just feel bad. I'm like, I'm literally taking away from this small independent coffee shop. But I get it. I think like it's probably infuriating for someone like her to see me just sort of be just like take a great recipe, get a cool idea, and then just be like, you know what? I'm just going to do this at home. And I'm sure it's coffee is sort of a small little piece compared to what could be a much larger business. Call it, I don't know, logo design used to be like you'd turn to the professional. Now you can just go onto a quick website or do it yourself because the tools are so easy. Or building a website used to be a whole professional career. Now you just click a couple buttons.
And now you just go to Wix.com.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Wix. I don't know. Anyway, I think like this idea, like the revolution of online learning and you're being able to like do everything yourself makes it easier and faster. So there is something to that. But at the same time, you know, fuck Randy. I mean, you know, like people can grow their own shit.
Well, the one place where this metaphor kind of falls apart as far as South Park goes is that like the big companies don't get that mad if you do like homebrewing shit or whatever, because like, guess who you buy the homebrewing kit from? Like, it's like Amazon Starbucks. Who like gets their shit from whoever. And like the money just continues cycling into those programs anyways. So it's not like in the show, it's like Randy's like, oh, Steven like is growing his own. Like actually Randy getting mad kind of makes sense because he's running his own farm. But, like the MedMen guys getting upset is like, fucking, I bet the people who are making their own weed are buying it from fucking MedMen. Like, it's not, I don't know. It's like, there isn't really a way to like escape that cycle of like this kind of monopolistic framework. Cause like they just own all the stuff.
Got it. All right. What other emails we got?
All right. So these are on to the episode two questions, starting with one from Sophia, who says, "Hey, authoritarians, love the podcast. So glad you're back for the new season. We're glad that you're listening. I just finished watching the latest episode of South Park, and honestly, I'm torn. I really wanted to get your guys' thoughts on how Randy is shaping up to basically be the main character of the season. Is there such a thing as too much Randy? I think there is. And what do you guys think of the story revolving almost exclusively around Integrity Farms? For me personally, as someone who has literally no interest in weed or vaping, that's not me. The entire Integrity Farm storyline is super boring to me. I literally couldn't care less about it. Feels like the show is drifting away from South Park, and it kind of makes me sad. I miss the old theme song, too. P.S. While I didn't like the episode as a whole, the throwback to a finger bang had me dying of laughter. It was a nice touch.
Oh, man.
I love Randy.
I love Randy. And I feel a little bit like the show is maturing into finding Randy more interesting than like the Cartman. I get the nostalgia for sure. But
we have another 22 episodes of that, or 22 seasons of
Randy.
The older stuff. Of like the kids and the kind of the older stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I also feel like there's kind of nobody that Trey hates more than like snobby weed sellers, legal weed sellers. So I feel like there's kind of endless things for them to make fun of there.
Yeah. I also think it's important to remember that like truly the least interesting thing about Randy and the Integrity stuff is that he's selling weed. Do you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
It's how he's selling it and how he's interacting with like commercialism and corporatism generally. So it's important, like, yeah, there's like little weed in jokes that happen, like people saying, talking about Kush or like being real high or whatever. But like, for the most part, the joke isn't really about, it's more about like making fun of Amazon than it is about making fun of like weed stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For the most part. He's and I think that's an important like thing to keep in mind.
Again, I think they really kind of found themselves stumbling on something here with Integrity Weed, just with this whole arc for Randy. And he's the adult. He's got the adult ideas. He's the entrepreneur. He's the businessman. He's not doing just like, you know, school jokes and school schemes like Cartman. Mm-hmm. He's going way bigger and doing it. And in that way, and because of that, Trey and Matt seem to be able to make fun of the commercialism and the adult problems and our own lunacy as adults.
I'd also just kind of argue that he's a more nuanced antagonist than Cartman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Am I wrong?
No, I think so. Like Randy.
Yeah.
Randy sees himself as like the good guy in many ways, whereas Cartman is just totally. Like, I'm doing the thing that I think is fun because I'm a little freaky pervert boy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. What other emails we got? But thank, that's a great question.
Yeah, that was a really good one. Thank you for that. We got one from Alex who says, "Hey guys, Alex from Vegas here. I got one quick thing from the first two episodes of this season." I think he means one quick thing each, or he or she means one quick thing each. Episode one, did you guys notice the beginning of the episode when Cartman is getting his soda? It's reminiscent of when Stan had his feeling old storyline. Whenever he was pouring the sodas out of the machine, it sounded like the shitting sound they use for Stan's episodes. I didn't notice that.
No, I didn't notice that either.
That's
I'll go double check that. But if you spotted that, well done you. And then episode two, both of the first two episodes have had a pretty big callback to older episodes. With the first episode going back to the "You're a towel" joke and last night's episode featuring Fingerbang. Do you think this might be a running theme with the season? Love the podcast and please do more YouTube videos on South Park sometime. We will.
We definitely will.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, what do you guys think about that second question, which I think is pretty interesting. Do you guys think that this sort of like callbacks and remembering stuff and like flashing back to old South Park is going to be a big part of this season?
I almost wonder if there's a balance that they're trying to strike between doing something pretty new for them with Integrity Farms and like reminding people that like we're still like the same South Park and, you know, flashing back. I feel like maybe they're trying to mix like newness with nostalgia. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to kind of agree. Like it seems like they are sort of trying to like you use like old stuff to be like, hey, we're South Park, which means we can do this new stuff where we make fun of other things.
Totally.
Which is fair to me.
Yeah. I wouldn't be mad at
that.
Any
thoughts, Jacob?
Yeah. No, I think we'll see a couple of glimpses of past stuff as always. I would be love to see some more season 19 kind of stuff again. If there's ever a shout back to Whole Foods again or Soda Sopa, I'm not holding my breath for any of that stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised if we just get more glimpses throughout the season. I think we've probably had that throughout the entire show, kind of these little callbacks that are kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this one
so much
is,
material.
This one is kind of similar. This is from Madjax, who says, "Hey, authoritarians, glad South Park is black. Glad you're back. Hey, we're glad you're back."
Yay.
then says, "I have a meta question for you. Beyond whether Disney is about to buy Paramount, quote, what's South Park? Do I own that? Banned in China seemed like the first episode in quite a long time that was Stan-centric, because whenever the Marshes are in an episode, Randy tends to take over. Do you agree with this premise? And if so, do you think it's intentional? Especially since Stan desperately seems to want to leave the farm, but return to his old house. Also, is there any significance to the fact that Stan made the callback to the finger bang episode, and last week there might have been a callback to gnomes when he reads a speech written by an adult for the ostensive benefit of a small business owner? Are we going to see Stan making more callbacks, and could that say anything specifically about how Trey is thinking about the show? Or could it be the subtle evil influence of the member berries slowly rising up? Curious about your thoughts as to whether there's anything there. Respect, Mad Jax.
Thanks, Mad Jax. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't feel like Randy took over. I just felt like I really thought there was a solid A and B plot. Randy had the A plot to get us to China. Stan has his own story. Like, Randy's trying so hard to be acceptable or to be enterprising, while Stan is becoming very successful on his own. They both have a very parallel path, but it didn't seem like, I didn't feel like he stole the limelight. I felt like they really had like a pretty equal.
Yeah. I don't think some people are saying this is Randy centric. People are saying it's Stan centric. It's just like, there's an A and a B plot. It's Randy and Stan.
Yeah.
Yeah. They feel pretty parallel in terms of their paths.
I feel like one thing I want more of, this is not relevant to the question, but I feel like I want more of Randy and Stan like together and like watching them clash.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, in wrestling terms, they're kind of saving that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, they're building that feud and saving it for like the big pay-per-view.
The showdown.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Because I think you're totally right that we're just building all this tension, but it's going to pay off eventually.
Yeah.
As far as the meta stuff, I kind of think it makes a little bit of sense that like this show, because it does seem like they're not reconciling with South Park's place in the culture, but they're just reconciling with the culture at large. And so sort of like historicizing themselves within that does make sense to me as like a project they'd be doing. It's just like, it's because of the second episode, it's like really hard to say like what it is. Like, obviously there's like little bits of like South Park asserting its independence or whatever, but I don't know if there's like anything more to it than that.
I would be down for them to ever complete the member berry plot line.
Yeah,
because that was a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
for sure.
Any other questions, Lex, on from the mailbag?
No, that is it. Those are all of our emails.
Awesome. Sweet. I can give a little golf clap guys for that. Yay. Thank you so much. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening to the show. And we'll be back next week with episode 3. I don't think we have a name yet. I think they haven't even figured out what the plot's going to be yet. But join us next Thursday for season 23, episode 3 of South Park. I want to thank our authoritarians today. Thank you to Amanda Shirker.
Thanks, guys.
And Lux out in Austin.
Woohoo!
Anything you guys want to plug or talk about? I know we've talked about the articles and medium.com/wisecrack.
Yeah, just go to our channel, go to our Medium, watch and read everything, please.
Another podcast I do that Jared is often on, which maybe we should try and get you guys on as well, called the Game Boys Podcast, spelled with B-O-I-Z, with me and a friend Griffin Davis. That's a very fun podcast about video games. But more importantly is this dumb wrestling show I do called Party World Wrestling is going to be in Houston on October 18th, doing a show with stand-up comedian Kath Barbadoro and podcast called Street Fight Radio at Houston Underground. If you're in Houston, you should go. I'll be there. And so will a bunch of weird characters and stuff. And it's a good time. So tickets are going pretty quick. So check it out.
Go get tickets. I was with Lux in Austin. He was showing me footage from the one in Austin, the recent Austin performance, or the recent Austin show, and it was awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, man. I want to be in Houston.
It's no really fair. Dope. We got to figure out a way of getting over there.
Yeah. If you guys wanted to know more about it, we just got a review in noted theater magazine Sightlines for some reason. So if you look up Party World Wrestling and Sightlines, you can find some good information.
Thanks so much.
Sweet.
So thanks again to everybody. Screw you guys. We're going home. Hope you had a great one, a great week, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Deuces. Toodles.